Hello, hello, Faith Jacobs here, and welcome to a little behind the scenes. So, it has occurred to me, I suppose, that maybe there's not much understanding about this world I've created. And that's okay, I don't expect my audience to know everything, because sometimes when you're creating any kind of series, you can't necessarily go Tolkien on the lore. There was only one J.R.R. Tolkien, and he was great at world building and a lot of lore dumping in his stories. But that's what makes Tolkien Tolkien. Personally, probably find myself creating worlds more like C.S. Lewis, where while I find it important that you have lore and you have things that are, you know, how do I put this? It's important that you build your world. But at the end of the day, I'm here to try and tell a story. And to do that, sometimes you can't always explain everything about the world in front of you. And it's a podcast medium. So as the webtoon version of this project failed, in my opinion, because everybody and their mother decided to try and tell me how they wanted the art to look, which, advice for anybody out there either creating anything, don't listen to the trolls. And don't listen to them, because all they are insecure people who probably couldn't draw to save their lives. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. I can rant about that all day, but a little piece of advice, just don't listen to negative people. It will do you a world of good. So I guess I'm here to sort of peel back the curtain on this show and explain to you all what the land of Tir na n'Ak is. At least as far as the way I've designed my version of it. So, first off, what is Tir na n'Ag? Well, Tir na n'Ag is a land that is described often in Celtic and Welsh mythologies. Often in very UK, you know, over in Europe, you know, it's a very, very, very European folkland of mythical creatures, such as the kinds that you might find in Narnia or Lord of the Rings. You have elves, you have banshees, you have the Seed, you have Gwyllions and Nixies and Pixies and Fauns and Centaurs and not vampires, but, like, you know, all kinds of, like, pukas, and all kinds of different mythos. You know, the Sin Anwen. And so that, the land of Tir na n'Ag is, or depending on where you are in the UK, it might be pronounced Nok, Nog, Tir na Thuin, Magmel, Avalon. It has many names, and it is the land under the hill, or the land across the sea, or the Isle of Eternal Youth. It is the place where creatures from Irish and English folk tales live. And sometimes in those folk tales, humans wander their way into the Fae Plains, often either by accident, through strange mists, or or they're brought there. In most stories, the Fae are tricksters. In a lot of stories, the Fae are, sometimes they're malevolent, sometimes they're benign, sometimes they're helpful, sometimes they're mean, sometimes they like to play pranks. And the Fae often are divided into two categories. You have Seelie Fae, which are considered like the good Fae and the light Fae, and you might recognize these terms if you've played D&D. You have the Seelie Fae, who are the good Fae, and they are not tricksters, and they're not, you know, they're often helpful to humans. So good, potentially good Fae could be like elves, you know, good pixies, and fauns, or satyrs, I think, as another mythology calls them. And then the unseelie Fae, those are the dark Fae. Those are the Fae that are often the tricksters. And so those would be themes like changelings, which if you've listened to Chaotic Idiots Season 1, Leroy is a changeling. He is born of a race that their mythology is that they swap mortal babies for fey ones. And there's lots of stories surrounding that. Or in my story, the Unseelie Fae are a little race of characters I call nightmares. And I want to say maybe even succubi and incubi are amongst Unseelie Fae. Or if you've watched a little TV show called Lost Girl, you would have been introduced to the world of the Unseelie and Seelie Fae. Which is partially where I was inspired for the idea of Chaotic Idiots, was from Lost Girl. But that's a whole other story. So, the land of Tir na n'Ak. Another place you might recognize it, and might have seen it, if you're familiar with the TV series from Amazon Prime, Carnival Row, which is an amazing show, by the way. You would have seen the Critch, the characters that are in the Burg, are from the land of Tir na n'Og, and they are pixies, and there are fauns, and you have the Sin Anwin are the enemies, the kingdom of Tir na n'Un, which I think is a play on the land that the Sin Anwin come from. It's a war-torn land that is shrouded in myth and mystery. And the way that Carnival Row described Tir na n'Og and showed Tir na n'Og was that it was a luscious land of different kinds of like highlands and greenery and fields and forests and little like medieval style towns. So that's what Tir na n'Og is. It is this mysterious land. There are many, 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 like, takes on the Fae. And sometimes the takes on the Fae... This podcast is not explicit. Not really. But in modern fiction, if you see anything sometimes to do with the Fae, they're often those cheesy romance, like, adult romance novels, and you're like, we're over-sexualizing the Fae, when I don't really think the Fae were ever sexy to, like, begin with, in my opinion. In my opinion, the Fae were never, like, you read some of these stories about these creatures, you wouldn't want to touch them with, like, a 10-foot pole. they're that terrifying, you know. And it makes you wonder what people were on back in the days when they were coming up with these, you know, stories and stuff. But So the land of Tunanak has been covered by various mediums, whether it was Lost Girl, Carnival Row, my favorite podcast by Parcast Productions called Fairy, and I would definitely recommend Fairy. It was so good. Fairy was terrifying. Or it's or you've got the stupid, cheesy adult, romance novels where they're over-sexualizing fae and human relationships as this steamy romance. But that's not necessarily what I wanted to do here. I wanted, with my version of Tir na n'Ok, I probably pulled more from fantasy shows that I was watching growing up. Particularly, I can tell you, The Adventures of Merlin, BBC's Adventures of Merlin. So if I was pulling, if I'm being honest, and if I could, if I were pitching this show to somebody, now we're going to describe Tir na n'Ok. I would say that Tir na n'Ok is like Witcher meets Merlin meets Carnival Row meets Lost Girl. Because if you go through those four influences there, you will kind of see what I pulled from, at least as far as like influences go and inspiration goes. So it's like Narnia, Lord of the Rings, tamer than Game of Thrones. But like, if you liked all these things, if you like Game of Thrones, you might enjoy Tir na n'Ok. If you like Lost Girl, you'll enjoy Kiya Gideon's first season. If you like things such as The Adventures of Merlin, and you enjoyed the stuff like Witcher, it has a real mix of things. And so my version of Tir na n'Ok is basically that. It's like if you took the adventure style that was BBC's Adventures of Merlin, and you combined it with the Fae realm of Carnival Row, and we really focused in and honed in on that war that they talk about in Carnival Row, rather than just like focusing on it in like flashback sequences. Like if they really fleshed out the story with the war and what really is, because I think, and we're gonna delve into tangents as I'm talking in that throughout this episode, but this is all kind of, I guess I could title this, like the influences behind Tir na n'Ok and Chaotic Idiots. So if you watch Carnival Row, and when I watched Carnival Row, which is where I got the idea to create Tir na n'Ok, I sat there, and I remember the thing that stood out to me was they said the land of the Fae is a war-torn place as they fight their enemies, the Pact, for the riches of Tir na n'Ok. And I thought to myself, oh boy, what a great backdrop. You've got this war-torn Tir na n'Ok. This war-torn land of the Fae. And with the war-torn land of the Fae, there is, the Fae are leaving their homeland. They're boarding ships and they're leaving their homeland. And you'll see that influence present, in Tir na n'Ok, especially with the prologue when but the only difference for my story, and maybe these are spoilers, so I guess I'll say spoilers for my story, where it might go if we're so lucky to do another season, provided the stars align and life allows me, to keep on creating these amazing audio productions with the amazing people that I have come to call colleagues and actor friends of mine. The story goes that Edgar is destined, the character of Edgar Faust, our main protagonist, is destined for something evil. For some reason, The hands of destiny, the hands of fate have chosen Edgar, and they have set him off on the beginnings of a path to destroy the world in front of him. Now, why? He doesn't know. And there seem to be no answers. But eventually, it will lead to a moment or a potential moment in the future where Edgar is in the sky. He's a vampire, so he can fly. So he is floating above the city of his kingdom of Nocturne, which is the vampire kingdom in the land of the Fae. And he is over it, and he has set it on fire. He has totally and utterly set the kingdom on fire. He's burning it to the ground. But not only that, he somehow, through the use of forbidden magic, finds a way to set the world of the Fae to collapse. He almost causes the core of the world that they are seated on. He has somehow disrupted that core, and it is imploding. It is literally about to explode. It's literally about to crack into pieces and explode. Kind of like what happened to the Enchanted Forest in Once Upon a Time. But like, instead of it being a place that they can go back to, it is not even inhabitable. Nobody's left there. Nobody survived. He physically finds a way through the use of magic to blow the land of the Fae to smithereens, which forces them to flee their homeland. So Edgar's destiny is that he is destined to destroy the land of Tir na n'Och. He's destined to cause that land to collapse in on itself and to eventually destroy millions and millions of Fae lives. And those who were so lucky to escape would include, of course, the Faust family, Leroy's mother, and several other prominent members who are parents to the cast of Caer Gynged. Some who you did not get to meet due to the fact that, and more behind the scenes stuff, not many people responded to my casting call. I tried really hard to get people, and it was a lot of no's. A lot of no's and a lot of broken promises. And that happens. That happens in this, you know, in this industry, especially in the indie side of things. Especially when you are a unpaid production, and you're not unpaid because you don't want to, or because you don't care about the people who are in front of you who are coming on board to do these things. It's really unpaid, just for reasons. But the whole point is, that is the story of my version of Tir na n'Och, and the story of Tir na n'Och Brotherhood is that they are at war, and the reason they're at war has not been revealed. And I debated revealing the reason behind the war, and in a scene that was actually cut from the season finale that would have revealed the true intentions behind the reason why a race of Fae I created. So this is my own original creation. They're called the Mavens. And the Mavens, M-A-V-E-N-S, the Mavens are a race of Fae that have the power over time itself. And this is sort of touched upon in Caer Gynged season 1, so there is a little bit of backstory there that I did pull from. The Mavens were a race of fae that sort of kind of came out of nowhere. They were like the Isos in Tron Legacy, if everybody remembers Tron Legacy. The Mavens sort of just kind of popped up out of nowhere one day, and unlike the other fae, the Mavens have the ability to utilize nature in all its facets. So they're not just stuck to one type of magic based upon their fae type. In the world of the fae, my world of the fae, the way magic works is that you have different kinds of magic. You have psychological magic, and then you have elemental magic. And elemental and psychological magic are, it's a case by case for each race in my fate, in my world. And with vampires are very emotional creatures, so I'll use them as an example because they're the ones who I've defined the most as far as how their magic works. The vampires have magic that is tied to their strongest emotion. So we'll use Edgar as an example. Edgar's strongest emotion is anger. Anger and sometimes sadness. So, but mainly there's a lot of anger. This character has a lot of anger to him. And so at some point in his life, during an intense moment of serious distress that was brought on by anger. His power of the phoenix, which is what fire is referred to, is a phoenix flame, which comes from the god Ardor. He was gifted this, or it was awakened, as anger is tied to Ardor. So fire often equals anger. The god Ardor, who is the god of anger and the god of flame, in my world. That is what Edgar's strongest emotion was, and therefore his ability is flame. Whereas Eren is more in tune with nature, so he might have the power over plant life, over vines, over greenery, to heal. Eren, ironically, has the ability to heal. He just doesn't know it yet because he hasn't unlocked his magical abilities at this point in the story. And so each character and each facet of the fae has ended up, they, depending on how I've kind of set up the different fae types. That's how they'll unlock their magic powers. But mavens in my story don't have such limitation. For whatever reason, the mavens are so in tune with nature that they can control fire, they can control water, they can control wind, light, shadow. And they're very elemental, they're not psychological. But they can control all the elements of magic with no limitations. And the gods grow, who are very active in my world, by the way. I just haven't utilized them yet, but the gods are very, I've utilized them a little bit, but more in the malicious way. The gods are very active in the Fae realm. They are physical beings. They are not. They're a lot like the gods in Skyrim, which is where I pull some inspiration for my gods, for my divine character, for my divines in this realm function like the gods in Skyrim. So Molag Bal, or Azura, or what's her face? Like half the gods in Skyrim, and there are a lot of gods in Skyrim. But like some of the ones that I've brought on and brought into the story, that's how they function. They interact with their chosen champion, victim, whatever, what have you, through dreams and almost telepathic-like communication. They don't have to be near a shrine. They don't have to really be anywhere. The gods are omnipotent, basically. So, but the gods are jealous of the mavens, because particularly the gods of fate are jealous of the mavens, because not only can the mavens control all the elements of magic, but they control the most magical element of all. The power over time and fate. The mavens are not gods, but the mavens have that divine power. A power that rightly should be the gods, because we all know that in most stories, gods get jealous. Divine gods in any Norse mythos, or Greek mythology, or Roman mythology, the gods get jealous. Hell, even Poseidon flooded the city of Atlantis because he was so rage-driven and hell-bent to destroy the Atlanteans for, I think, their disobedience or something. Like they did something that pissed off Poseidon. So, you know, but the gods are jealous of this at the mavens. Control the power of time and fate. Because if you control the power of time and fate, well, death is never a factor, is it? Somebody's choices could be rewritten entirely, but there's consequences. There's consequences to having that. Because time works like equivalent exchange. From Full Metal Alchemist, you have to give something in order for it to be given to you. So, for example, in Chaotic Idiots Season 1, Jacob is kidnapped by Erebus, and he dies. At the same time that Jacob is dying, Leroy realizes that he's in danger from his brother, who sort of threatens him a little bit. And Leroy, not realizing that Jacob has died, doesn't realize the price he is paying to go back and protect Jacob. Because he feels like everything that happened, Jacob going missing and Erebus showing up, he feels like it's his fault. If he had just been with Jacob the entire time, maybe Jacob wouldn't have died. And so what Leroy's giving up in that moment is an unknowingly giving up, but he is sacrificing life for life because it's equivalent exchange. It will be whatever price you pay, you have to give up something of equal value. So let's say that Malachi and Tir Nanoq knew of the Maven's power. And he wanted to get to rewind back to the moment where him and Edgar get into that fight. And he wanted to stop. He didn't want that fight to happen. He would have to give up something in order to, you know, of equivalent exchange to that fight never happening. So somebody else has to get into a fight, you know, in order for there to be balance. Because time has to balance itself out. Nature has to balance itself out. In order for the dominoes to fall one way versus them falling the other way. And that's what I'm saying, is I don't think people realize how actually complicated Tir Nanoq is. I don't think anybody realizes how insanely layered this world is. And it's because in a world like this, and particularly when you're trying to get, you know, you're trying to keep a story moving, you can't always sit there and ramble about your lore. And you just can't. Like, when it comes to lore, when it comes to doing stuff like this, excuse me, when it comes to doing stuff like this, there are just certain things that you have to cut. And I think I cut the conversation and the reveal of why the war was going on and why certain parties were involved, like the Sanguine Witches and the Were-Leopards, You know, I think I implied it a little bit in the episode Fate of a Mage, where we follow Sirius as he's been sent on this mission to infiltrate the Fae, the face of the doll, the sanguine hags. Like, he's been sent on this mission by his commanding officer, oh goodness, I'm so sorry. he's been sent on a mission by his commanding officer to infiltrate the Land of Shadow. And because he's been sent on this mission, we follow him in an episode titled Fate of a Mage, where it is revealed that he has been caught, and he ends up in prison with this were-leopard named Gilmore. He's also been caught by the sanguine hags, which the story for him, I think, at least in my head, was that Gilmore was a traitor. Maybe Gilmore was exhibiting some things that weren't aligning with the alliance that the were-leopards have with the sanguine hags. And so he was put into the dungeons, where he ends up with Sirius. And it's revealed that the gods have offered many fae power if they can get their hands on what the mavens are doing. So the whole thing is, when you're creating a story like this, when you're crafting a story like this, you just don't sometimes have the means to put in all the small details. Like, there is a whole bunch of lore about the vampires that I know, and I might throw it in there every once in a while. Little things here and there. Like, my favorite scene in Keanu Gideon's season 1 is the dinner sequence, because we get to hear Jacob and his dad talking about the lore of their people. And it's my favorite thing ever, because, you know, you have this kid who's grown up in a land where maybe he's been taught that stuff, but or he's learning it, and you know, his dad, of course, you know, grew up hearing all these old folk tales, and so his dad gets to tell him, you know, the story of their people and how their people came to be, you know, as they're talking about their history. But it's little things like that that you can sometimes slip in and have it be part of the conversation, but you just can't do entire episodes, especially on an indie production. You can't afford it. And sometimes you don't have actors to play those characters, you know. But Tirnanog, my story of Tirnanog is so rich in lore, and I could go on for ages upon ages upon ages of talking about the lore and different things that I know, you know. So don't mistake Tirnanog for not having layers upon layers of, like, lore. It really does. It really does have a lot of lore. I just don't have the time or the space to tell it. particularly when you're trying to tell a story in a limited amount of time. And I told this story not even to its fullest in 15 episodes. But I told some of it. I told the parts of it that were needed. And that was that you got to know Edgar. You got to know Malachi. You got to know the relationship between Edgar, Malachi, and Aaron. And that was the most important part. You got to know Edgar's relationship with Sirius a little bit. Not much, but you got to see it somewhat. And you just got to witness these characters, you know, young, not seasoned, not in a coma, not divided, not trauma-ridden yet. I mean, they were, you know, they're still in the early phases of their life. You know, they're all in their 20s. And you know, it's them kind of caught up in some ugliness that they didn't really, I think, expect to be caught up in. And that's, and so that's the story at hand. But there's so much deeper, richer lore. And maybe one of these days I'll go through a book or something, or I'll create something that goes through some of the lore of Tir na n'Ak. But I had somebody ask me, so what is Tir na n'Ak? Is it a medieval land? And I went, well, yes and no. The way I would describe it is like if you were to take the world of the Adventures of Merlin and you were to combine it with like the land of Witcher or Lord of the Rings or Narnia. Like, it's very much that fantasy medieval style land, but it's not like we're in the Renaissance period. We're in the 1600s. We're in the 1630s, actually. But we're in a version of the 1600s that is more fantasy. It's medieval style, but it's not one particular moment in history. Especially because they're vampires, you know, these characters aren't human, you know, although I'm telling a very human story with them. And I have had people look at me and go, I forget that the characters I'm listening to aren't human sometimes, particularly for season one, because they use cars, they have cell phones, they go to school, but it's entirely a fantastical fantasy world. So all the characters you're listening to are vampires, they're sirens, they're nixies, they're dragons. I have two characters who are dragons, you know, but like very humanoid looking, because I thought it would be ridiculous to make these characters look like anything but humanoid in some way, some form or fashion. And I probably pulled from like She-Ra for that, if I'm being very honest, you know. I very much wanted these characters. She-Ra, Princesses of Power, I was probably an influence in that way, because I didn't want these characters to look, I wanted them to be non-human. But I wanted them to feel relatable. Because if you make them, you know, I wanted, which is probably me pulling from my favorite TV show when I was younger, Babylon 5. These characters looked non-human, but you still felt for them, because there was a shred of humanness to them, even if they weren't human. It's like Star Wars. It's like Star Wars or Babylon 5. You know that the characters in front of you, not all of them are human, but there are some who feel very, very, very humanoid, and they go through things that we as people would experience, which is loss, grief, feeling different, trying to find your place in the world. Ahsoka Tano is not human at all, and she's one of the... When other girls were relating to Leia, I was relating to Ahsoka Tano. You know? Ahsoka Tano, you know, is the... Or Hera Syndulla. Hera Syndulla is not human at all. I related more to Hera, you know? I think Sabine was one of the rare exceptions where I actually related to a human character in Star Wars. But it was Ahsoka and it was Hera. I was relating more to Delenn from Babylon 5 than I was Susan Ivanova. I like Ivanova, but I think I was relating more to Delenn. So when I'm creating this story, when I'm crafting this story, and I'm going through all these different things, and we're all on different strains right now as far as the topic of conversation. But I'm trying to create, it's a fantasy story. So the characters in front of you, the characters that you're listening to, they're vampires. But I think what I made clear to my actors was, I don't want you to put on a silly Transylvania. I don't want, you know, I don't want anyone to suck your blood. I don't want silly Transylvanian stereotypical. I didn't want the accents that you might hear in the show, like What We Do in the Shadows. As much as I love What We Do in the Shadows, and I love stuff like that, I didn't want a cliche. I'll say this much. I didn't want, like, Edward from Twilight. But I also didn't want Klaus Mikkelsen from Vampire Diaries. I wasn't looking for the CW vampire. I wasn't looking for maybe for Damon and Stefan. I was looking for more natural performances. I was looking for people to come in and I wanted something more grounded and more serious. Because as much as there's been a lot of vampire media and there's been, you know, good and bad takes on vampires as far as that goes, I wanted something that was more like Witcher. I wanted something that was more like, and you can hate this for all you want, Rings of Power. I wanted a story that was a lot like Lord of the Rings. And I wanted that with, you know, and here's the thing, think about it. When Legolas speaks, or when Galadriel speaks, they all speak in a very high, proper voice, you know? But normal accents. Frodo speaks like Frodo. Merry and Pippin speak like Merry and Pippin. I didn't want anybody to come into this show thinking that they had to put on a silly accent. Because it's not a silly show. Despite its title, the full title of this series is Chaotic Idiots. And I've had people look at me and go, you know, when I saw the title, I thought it was going to be some comedy, but it's not. I'm like, no, it's not. And I'm someone who's a believer in the unconventional titles. Chaotic Idiots series is the full project title. That's what it's under the banner of, but Chaotic Idiots is a coming-of-age story. Turn the Knock, which is the prequel to Chaotic Idiots, is not. It is a drama. It is a family-styled drama where, and it's quite serious. It deals with trauma, it deals with turmoil, it deals with conflict, it deals with disability, it deals with quite a lot of things. It deals with adult relationships, some that are quite manipulative and toxic, and it deals with a lot of subject matter that is more mature but not explicit. So, to understand, you know, to reel it all back around, Tir na n'Ak is a complicated story. At its core value, it is a story that is very much influenced and inspired by things such as Lord of the Rings, Witcher, Narnia, Game of Thrones, and you know, all the fantastical stories out there that I mentioned. Carnival Row, you know, heavily was like the biggest jumping off point for my inspiration for this series. But it differs in a lot of ways. I will not have characters engaging in explicit material. If anything, it's all implied because they are adults and they deal with adult situations, but you're not going to be experiencing that here. So, while I say that its influences are things like Game of Thrones and Carnival Row, it is much tamer than either of those, particularly in certain subject matters. It is not gory, it is not bloody, it is not explicit in adult nature. It is very much a high PG-13, mainly for the mental health things I deal with as a subject matter. There's so much here. So, all I can say is this is just a little bit of a taste. I'm not gonna spend, 2 hours or an hour going over all the lore and stuff, but for those who are listening and those who have listened, first off, I want to thank you for listening to this show. Second, I would implore you to go to our IMDb and please review the show, or go to our Apple Podcast page and please review the show. Reviews help more than you realize. Share the show around if you wouldn't mind. Drop us a review. Spotify doesn't allow you to really do that. But, we have a website. We have places where you can, tell us about the show. Podchaser. There's a Podchaser page. There's all kinds of cool places that you can tell us what you think about the show. And it would really mean a lot to me if you did. Because we've been doing this, we're coming up, fun fact, come May, we are coming up on 4 years. 4 years of this show being out. This project being a thing, it was crafted in May, on May 15th of 2020. How nuts is that? May 15th. This little thing that I made as a webtoon that everyone and their mother decided that they were going to jump on the hate bandwagon and either ignore or just not tell me what they thought of it, in a positive light, because all that people like to do is critique. You like to critique, and it's stupid. This show is not perfect by any means, but unless you're critique is something that holds a little bit more water than, it's just stupid because I don't understand it. Then it's not really critique, it's more of a complaint. So, this series is much more complicated than I can ever delve into on my own. There's so much more to it. I've talked to several of my actors about stuff. They were like, oh yeah. They're like, I sort of understand, but maybe you can elaborate. I'm like, well, here's a little bit of the story. But there's so much that I couldn't even begin to describe to you. So, I know that it might not seem like there's much. But it's only because at this point in my life, as a writer and a creator and a director and somebody who is the head of this project, if I were dumping all the stuff I just told you, every single episode, it'd be too much to wrap your head around. There's a lot of lore, and there's a lot of things that I know, which is why I'm able to write as much as I'm able to write, because I already know the foundation. And sometimes I'm able to bring that foundation into the story when it's relevant. And sometimes it's not relevant. And sometimes the placement of those scenes are awkward, or they change the story, or they slow it down, or they take away from what I'm really trying to talk about. Which is, how far are you willing to go for somebody that you love? How far would you go to protect them, to keep them safe, would you enact revenge on the ones who wronged you for the one you love? And that's a story of Sirius and Edgar, and that's the stuff that I go through when I'm writing these and when I'm thinking about the future of this show, As far as its future is concerned right now, we've just wrapped. We wrapped on March 8th. It's amazing. 15 episodes are out. Long journey. But I hope that you will consider, continuing to support us in the future, whoever you might be, if you're listening. I thank you. And I guess I will see you on the flip side. I'll see you in the realm of the Fae. Hopefully, sometime in the near future. And until then, this has been Faith Jacobs. Sign off.